Welcome back to the Hollow Sky Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And it's Monday, Hollow Cult. You know what that means. We are here to power bomb our way through your work week.
I do like power bombing shit.
Hell yes. Kyle is coming back in hot on the Cult of the Black Cube. I personally am stoked. That intro episode was something.
It's interesting. It's been a pretty rough past couple days, so bear with me for any lack of enthusiasm or information. My car finally took a dump.
R.I.P. Jeep.
Yep, so now I gotta find a new one. Proving to be difficult because
money.
The economy sucks, and money is even worse.
Yeah, feel that.
So I have that to deal with. You know, it is what it is. Life's like I told my dad today. I'm like, life sucks. You just got to figure it out. That's all there is to it. That's just, if you take anything away from Hollow Sky, I think that is probably our new mantra.
And if
our new lesson to the world.
If you've ever tuned in, you know that we are one thing. It is not good at figuring stuff out.
This is true. We do our best, and that's about all we can do. So I guess there's a level of satisfaction in that. I feel like I'm talking to children right now. All you have to do is do your best, and that's it.
We, by the time this drops, I'm not sure what order we're dropping it in, but I think after. We just had an excellent interview with Derek Hayes from Monsters Among Us. He has a new documentary that dropped last month called The Borrego Triangle, High Strangeness in the Desert. It is awesome.
Pretty good. You ought to check it out.
Yep. It is excellent. The conversation was good. We talked about weirdness. We talked about his show. We talked about the documentary. We talked about our weirdness. Definitely cool. So you want to go back and check that out. Also, go back and check out the first episode of this, because you're going to want to hit that before you hit here, or you're going to be like, what are these guys talking about? And I get it. That's usually what everybody says anyway, but it would be even worse if you don't follow the order of said episodes. Now, on to the business. Check us out at all our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, TikTok, Discord, Reddit. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast. Join the cult. You know the drill. If you have a listener experience you'd like for us to feature on our Thursday show, Kyle has some details that you're going to want.
I do. You can very amazingly write out your experience. Include as much detail as you possibly can. Shoot it over to the email, which is going to be hollowskypodcast.com. Hollowskypodcast@gmail.com. That's where you're going to want to go. You can go to the .com to buy cool stuff. However, actually, you can actually submit your stories via website as well. So I wasn't wrong. Just slightly off than normal. And that's fair. Don't judge me. Yeah, you can also record yourself, shoot it over to the email. Definitely do the email for that. And we will put it on its own episode. You get your very own episode with Hollow Sky. It's kind of cool. Maybe, maybe not.
It's pretty dope.
Yeah, it's pretty honestly dope. You can also call or text the Hollow phone, which we occasionally text back. That is going to be 618-556-0837. It's all in the show notes. It's the same number we use for the live show. So if you'd like to call in to the live show, which is vastly different than this show, you're more than welcome to do that.
And encouraged.
Very much so.
If you'd like to support said show, plenty of ways you can do it. We have a Patreon that you can go check out. $7, you get all kinds of goodies, extra content, shows without ads, early shows, stuff like that. I'm kind of trying to make it my little pet project now. I'm using it as like a alternate social media, so I'll post a lot of things over there that don't make it out to the other socials, just because it's kind of cool, you know? It's kind of cool to read articles from the 1900s that you never find before.
It is definitely cool.
We have a website, like Kyle said, holoskypodcast.com. We got a store over there. Check that out. See if you wanted some holo swag to rep the holo cult. You can find it there. Venmo, if you'd like to throw some pocket change in there for us and our bad habits, we appreciate it. Best thing you can do, share the show, share the show, share the show. Broken record, share the show. The more ears we fall on, the better. You can also go to wherever you listen to your podcasts, your podcatcher, not Google Podcasts anymore, so RIP Google Podcasts. But you can leave us a 5-star rating and a review, and we'll shout you out if I can find it. This week's 5-star rating and review comes to us from our friend, Jorge Haman. Hope I said that right.
Let's go.
One of my top 5 stars. Love this podcast. They touch on a lot of subjects others won't. They talk about it in a very digestible manner, and it keeps me coming back. Great work, guys. Thank you. Jorge, you're one of my top 5. So we appreciate you.
That's what's up.
Thanks for taking the time to leave us those kind words. It does help. The more those ratings and reviews go up, the more we kind of get pushed with other podcasts of the same size, and it does help.
Yeah.
So we appreciate it, each and every one of you that leave it. If I haven't found yours or shouted you out yet, regardless of hearing it, we appreciate you. So here we are. If anybody wants a timestamp as to when the show starts because you hate the intro, this is your timestamp. The show is starting. Kyle's about to crack open.
Rot meow!
That black cube.
Let's go. So, revisiting the black cube. This is going to be some weird history and stuff like that in regards to the black cube, because I am very interested in some of the origins, how it spans across cultures. I tell you, like I told Steve before we started recording, reading this grimoire is slightly uncomfortable at times.
I should note that we purchased an actual copy of the grimoire.
We did.
It was pricey. After shipping from a country that is not the United States, it's about $115.
Right.
Which I'm like, man, that's pretty good for a book, you know?
Yep.
Then we looked it up, and it is well higher than that on resale sites.
Yeah.
So we made a good investment, everybody.
Hopefully it's a good investment, not an absolute ripoff. But.
Or hopefully it doesn't crack open the black cube and then Saturn's in here just trying to chomp on us.
Yeah, it's a... Well, you guys will learn. You'll learn right along with us. So, on the last episode, as kind of a refresher, we talked about how Arthur studied for years and was able to create his own ritual to summon a spirit and helps and hopes to cure all of his ailments. However, he ends up catching the attention of an entity that helped him along his way. This entity fulfilled all of its promises and actually gave Arthur more. But as he stated, with this kind of magic, you will bear scars. So I'm kind of anticipating that foreshadowing at some point to elaborate on the scars that he would have bared in using this kind of magic. But I haven't gotten to that far. I haven't gotten that far yet because the background is very in-depth. By Arthur. I left out a lot of it because it is so much and I'm trying to condense it. And like I said, and you can read it all on your own. However, I would use caution in reading this book. I was actually going to include something in this, but I didn't. And once we get there, you guys will know. And a lot of you will probably say thank you. But
I am very intrigued at this point.
So Arthur states that the intention of this book is simply an overview of a particular deity known as the Black Sun or Black Cube. The book itself is intended for practicing occultists, and this is one of those red flags for me. This book itself is intended for practicing occultists, but also states that it can be used by insightful readers of other backgrounds.
So I guess your intention kind of comes into play.
Yes. Yes. And it makes this venture into the Cult of the Black Cube that much more interesting.
So you could be an accidental occultist right now.
I think that is the sentiment there.
Well, that's what I said when we were talking about grimoires last episode, where we're trying to read this stuff, especially Latin, and we're going to be summoning things that don't want to be here.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to...
Yeah, there's actually quite a few more warnings that come along with this.
At least he's being thorough and trying to tell everybody, hey.
And he's honest, and it reminds me of a dude on TikTok that we've talked about several times.
Yeah.
But if I'm reading this correctly, because be aware, all this will be through Arthur's eyes, then translated further with my eyes and Steve's eyes. But if I'm reading this correctly, I do admire this statement by Arthur, because it's something that I actually preach a lot on. Not only preach, but I feel it in my soul, essentially. I call it boxes. However, Arthur breaks it down a bit more methodical than I do. The deity known as the Black Cube or Saturn, or many other names like Kronos, Sani, Samedi, Kievan, or even Tezcatlipoco, are just that. Arthur himself refers to it as the Saturnine deity. If you take a culture-specific approach to these types of things, it will actually have limitations resulting of the culture's bias, which I can relate to. Not that that's a bad thing to use your culture to help guide you through these areas, but if you're truly trying to understand these specific things, I feel like it's important to have that open mind, to remove said boxes and labels from things, because in the end, you have to acknowledge that you may be leading yourself astray, convincing yourself it's this one specific thing when it's not that thing. But because you're using your bias, it is actually, you know, misguiding you in the path that you're walking, which according to Arthur could actually be dangerous, which we will get into. But it brings me to a simple point for Steve and I, something I hadn't really contemplated, which could be due to my lack of knowledge or laziness, whatever excuse you want to use at that point. But Arthur says that Saturn is one of the very few deities that actually span across cultures, all the while having basically the very same characteristics as his example, saying that all solar deities are the same is a hard no for Arthur. The Aztec, the Egyptian solar deities share almost nothing in common with one another other than the simple fact that they are being related to the sun. According to Arthur, you will have people making these mistakes, which can be extremely dangerous, as he states. That it would be, as his example, it's like saying Lilith is no different than Hecate and Kali, simply because they are all female deities with a dark side. This book will apparently prove that Saturn spans most cultures. And it's interesting to me that he states that it can be dangerous in mislabeling these deities, almost like they have feelings that you can hurt.
Yeah, and
dumbly put.
And it, like we were talking about it outside, I feel like giving them names give them power, right?
Oh, yeah.
And if you give them the wrong name, it's almost like the power is misleading and it's not focused the way it was intended to be focused.
Right.
That makes sense.
It does. And I also think that I do, because there's a later part in this that correlates Saturn with human emotion. And I think there's something to be said about that, that these things, like, you can piss these things off. And because you got to think about it as if you were a deity or you were a god. I want to be careful in how I word this, but a lot of pillars in superior positions have a very particular way they want to be viewed and how they should be viewed, because they deserve, like when we were talking about it in the last episode, how Arthur put the thing over his head and he bowed his head in shame, yeah. You know, toward that deity. Like, you know, I'm expressing my humility because you are greater than me. You are bigger than I, and I should show you my humility when I am being presented in front of you. So I feel like if you misrepresent that situation, they take personal offense to it. You know, whether it's personal offense or even just like you have just straight up disrespected me, and now you will face my wrath.
It's interesting. Again, as we were talking outside, I feel like we should put this out to the cult to see their thoughts. A lot of these deities that span multiple different epochs and multiple different religions, if you strip them down, you take the names away, you take all the religious connotations away, the stories are very similar, and the players are all playing the same game. You know, it's like these entities were there before any person started documenting them.
Right.
And then as humans come along and interact with them, they take their interactions and they take the way they feel and how they think, and they kind of start jotting them down or telling them through oral traditions. And then one of them takes it this way and goes this direction. One of them takes it this way and goes this direction. And they become boxed and separated when in actuality, they're all from these same old entities and deities that have been there like forever, since before time, before humans existed.
Yeah. And it's bizarre the way they talk about Saturn, and we'll get into that here in just a minute, but it starts off with, I don't know if it is like, I don't even think it's one of the earliest scriptures of Saturn, but it starts off with medieval Islamic cosmology. You have seven planets of the solar system, which are more than just planets. They are physical representations of celestial intelligences. They hold influence over day-to-day affairs of humans and all life on Earth. If you are able to gain hold over these beings, you will be able to influence your life here. Not only for yourself, but depending on how you use it, and this is absolutely bananas, depending on how you use it, you can alter natural events for other people and even full regions, depending on how you're able to wield this power of the planets.
That is,
you terrifying. Can fuck with entire regions.
Yeah. So essentially, oh God damn it. What's it called? When you make your own choices, you know, it's the argument against fate.
Like freedom of choice,
yeah,
essentially.
Yeah, free will.
Free will.
Essentially, yeah. Free will.
Dirt to dirt.
Nada. Doesn't exist because it can be altered by people, even regular people wielding the power that these deities have.
And that is absolutely true. And Arthur comes to that point later on. Like, he brings up, see, in medieval Islamic esoterica, Saturn is an extremely popular figure, but he has a different name in these writings, he's known as Zuhal, Z-U-H-A-L. Or, these are interesting. So he has nicknames, right? Zuhal. And I don't know if these are nicknames or if they are interpretations of that name. But it also, I guess it stands for the one who is far away or the alien.
That's fucking weird.
And these, you got to remember, these are old Islamic texts. The cult of Zuhal basically became what Satanism is to medieval Christianity. Because I guess because Islam didn't really have a Satanist sect of it. And that's where the cult of Zuhal comes in. As he puts in the book, the Saturnine deity becomes the champion of the desperate, the greedy, the rebel, and the vengeance-driven. Apparently, Zuhal had sections of the Quran dedicated to it. Zuhal appeared in many manuscripts suggesting that many authors knew of this deity. But in their words, Saturn's authority was over the planets themselves, because each planet has like its own rights and its own authority. However, Saturn was able to influence and overstep all the other planets. So if you were able to align yourself with Zuhal, you could possibly use the influence to overrule all the other planetary powers. At a certain point, I was going to like actually word for word the text in this book, because apparently it was written by, I'm going to say this wrong, but I'm just going to go with it, Ibn Washia.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, and I'm just going to call him Ibn from now on. He writes of Zuhal, and it's a very interesting slash uncomfortable look at Zuhal, because he tells of the evil and how to appease that evil. Like he talks specifically about how to sacrifice things to him. As an example, Arthur is explaining the things in this text. Like it says, when you pray to him, give him a burnt offering of old hides, grease, strips of leather, and dead bats. And this is very interesting, because in Islamic law, bats are carrion, which is utter filth to them. It's a huge no-no to fuck with these things. But that is the offering you would give to said deity. There also, a writer will reuse words that have true meaning from the author to the readers. Like in this passage, you have evil, anger, prayer, black, which are all repeated. Arthur says it would suggest that Zuhal has emotions like a person, which makes him relatable, and that he is aware of human action, namely anger, and reacts to it. And I'm going to try to remember that for a point later on. And I know you might be confused, because I said in this passage you have evil, anger, and I chose to leave this specific passage out. This is the passage I was going to write word for word. And there's a reason why I didn't include this full passage, which I'll get to in just a second. But Ibn also claims that this deity has great power over everything in your life, and that he was taught this by the idol of the moon. Like I said earlier, I was going to read this word for word, because it's very interesting how it's all portrayed. However, there's a single passage that I know would get a lot of listeners to flip shit. So I'm going to leave out as much as possible, and this is the section that I included.
I'm going to say we just read it, but give a warning.
Well, I didn't write it down.
Oh, I guess the fates have decided.
Yeah. So it goes like this. I have asked his idol to benefit with this book of mine, everyone who reads it. The idol revealed to me, your prayer has been heard and your offering accepted.
Yeah, that's sus.
Yeah. So I left that out for you guys, the whole passage, because it is like a big, they call it a prayer, is what the way that it's described in the book. And at the end of it, as I'm reading it, that is like the last sentences that I read, is that everyone who reads this will get some sort of benefit. And then according to Ibn, the deity appears to him and says, your prayer has been heard and your offering accepted.
That is weird.
So, like I said, reading this book is slight, and I'm only in like the first quarter of the book. I'm not even through it all yet. And I'm already slightly uncomfortable. But masterfully written, I will give him that. I love the way that things get described. So continuing on, in other texts, you have words like eternal, power, endure, which suggests that Saturn is truly timeless. Of all the other planets, none are written about like this. Only Saturn has these descriptive words written about him. Furthermore, they write about how Zuul's power, and I just really loved this verbiage, Zuul's power is like a glacier. It is slow and relentless. Nothing can stand in its way. So what that means is if you are trying to invoke Zuul's power, you do not do it for quick results. They say planetary powers like Mercury are better for those results. However, Zuul's power is slow but fucking unstoppable. Like, once it is in play, it's in play. You cannot stop it.
Slow and steady conquers existence.
Yes. It's really bizarre reading all of this, to be honest. It's almost fearful how these old texts are written. They speak about how Zuul is cold, evil, and honorable, which don't exactly seem to fit together. But according to Arthur, it may suggest that despite its anger, it has a moral code that it follows. One thing's for sure, though, like as they write about Saturn or Zuul or whatever you want to call him, they make it very clear that this particular deity strikes fear in all the other planets, all the other gods. They all fear Zuul. And I do want to include only because of placements. I feel like it's important to toss out this for all of the theorists out there, because this is a very interesting text. And I'm just pulling it right out of the book. This is what he does to men when he is angered. But when he is content, then he gives them existence, long life, fame after death, acceptance in the eyes of those who look at them, and sweetness of speech. His anger is to be fear in situations like I just described to you, but his contentment is to be expected when he is east of the sun, or in the middle of his course, or in places which agree with his actions, or in the full speed of his travel, or in the cycle of his ascendance. And I find that very peculiar, because now they are talking about his planetary alignment in regards to the sun.
Oh, that makes sense.
Right?
Yeah, I was trying to figure that out in my head, but I didn't. I keep taking out the fact that it's like an actual
a planet.
Planetary.
At least that's what I'm taking away from it, is that they're talking. Whenever his planetary cycle is, like, he's more apt to these emotions.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But I find that very interesting. Yeah. You know, and it's when I'm reading about Saturn, it's also interesting because whenever I was coming up, and I know Steve was kind of into it as well, you have Greek mythology, and I was always drawn to Greek mythology. When you're learning about those gods, they all have plants and animals that they are of, right? You know, Zeus has a particular animal and a particular plant and then this, that, and the other. Zool was written about in the same manner. And a lot of people try to connect this writing style to the Greeks. However, these texts were written before that was introduced to these cultures. So it predated those types of of writing tactics, if you will. But it's interesting because there was a whole long list of things that were affiliated with Zool. But of note were its jewels, onyx, black stones, and lodestone. And I know iron was like one of the metals, and wolves and dark. Essentially, I know it sounds crazy, but essentially anything that represented black was affiliated with Zool. But it's interesting that you have this idea of the black cube, and you know the onyx and the black stones were in correlation with Saturn, which means his lore either runs deep or there was some type of contact with Saturn. It's one or the other, right?
Which
it's not like it can't just be that ironic, because I'm not sure when
both Black Cube weird.
Well, I'm not sure when Black Cube was affiliated with it. You know, as the black, which is just another weird fucking thing. Because what other deity is known as a shape? If you really, cause I'm just now thinking about it. And forgive me, I only know mostly Greek mythology. I'm not really aware of other cultures. But I don't know that I've heard of any deity as in the form of a shape.
No. No, me either. Right offhand.
Another interesting tidbit about Zool is he is known as the holder of secrets, mysteries, and the unexplained. And they claim that when a movie shows knowledge being concealed in a secret laboratory or in ancient tombs, that is actually a manifestation of Saturnine power. Because Saturn praises essentially the grave robber that is able to steal the secrets and then hoard them away for themselves.
It's interesting.
Yeah, because, I mean, it is literally, it's like the direct representation of someone, of all occultists, I mean, if you think about it, that love having this hidden knowledge and not sharing it, like Arthur stated in the beginning, how he doesn't want to divulge this information. It's literally out of the teaching of Saturn.
Yeah.
Another interesting tidbit. Saturn also has the ability to influence human life, which we've already discussed, but it also has the ability to restrain the workings of other deities. So what I mean by that, say you do reach out to Mercury for specific help, or whatever other deity. I just use Mercury as an example because they say Mercury is fast and its results. If Saturn sees fit, Saturn can go, nuh-uh, not happening. He can squat. He can put a stop to that shit right now. Steve, you're not. No, it's not happening, bud. Watch this. So he has that power and authority to just squash every other deity's workings, which like you brought up earlier, I can't remember word for word, but you talked about free will. He can put a stop to that.
Alter it. Which I mean, is exactly in line with what Arthur came into contact with the first time he saw the entity.
Yeah.
Like he flat out said, I can change fate.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Yep. It's bizarre, dude. He seems to appear to people in a few different forms. So far that I've been able to find, he either presents itself as essentially a black cube or a quote-unquote black person, seemingly most likely a shadow person, like a person that is legitimately...
like a humanoid entity.
Yes. They also say that Saturn Zool's soul is an entity called Bremus, which has 6 component souls. Rocket science would suggest that a cube has 6 sides. So it's interesting that it's even more bizarre to me that you have a deity that has a soul, which is constructed of 6 other souls, possibly 7 in total, because I take it that Bremus is like the binding agent that holds all these 6 souls together.
That is so weird.
Yeah. And then you have the connection with the Black Stone of Mecca, which is rumored to have fallen from the heavens in the time of Adam and Eve. A lot of people will theorize what it's made of, you know, glass or this other stuff, but a lot of people are saying that it is mostly iron, and iron is actually a metal of Saturn. In other images of Saturn, he is holding a spear or a sickle.
Hey, Holocult, the weather's getting nice, and you know what that means. It's cryptid hunting season. And the first rule to cryptid hunting is good footwear. That's why we're excited to announce our partnership with Tecovas Boots. When you're out hunting the Dogman or stalking Chupacabra, you don't have time to break in boots. That's why Tecovas is so nice. They have first wear comfort. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with their styles when you're out hunting cryptids.
And let me tell you, their styles are on point. I've always considered getting me a pair of snakeskin boots, and their pair is mint. They also have crocodile boots, caiman boots, ostrich boots, regular leather boots. They have it all, and it's ridiculously awesome. You can even stop by the local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. So just imagine yourself getting a pair of legitimate snakeskin Hollow Sky branded boots. How awesome would that be?
Nothing is going to intimidate a dog man like a nice pair of gator skin boots. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's TECOVAS.com. They offer free shipping on all boots as well as free returns and exchanges and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
And a scepter, which clearly shows him being of action and ruling over. He gets known more for the sickle later on, because he is also like the deity of harvest. Like, there are a lot of positive things that get affiliated with Saturn, you know, producing more yield and all these different things that you wouldn't assume would be affiliated with something so evil. Like I said, he is known as the harvester of all things. Given his other known name is Kronos, which apparently Kronos is written several different ways. Kronos or Chronos. The CH is the Greek adaptation and also the Kronos we think of when it comes to time. Now, at some point, both Kronoses intertwine, right? And Steve, you were looking into it earlier, and you said that was like a Roman thing.
Yeah.
When they conquer people, they take their gods.
Yes.
And adapt it.
Yep. Let me find...
Which I find it very interesting.
Where exactly that is. I had it pulled up, and then I lost it. Okay, there is a Reddit thread, Ask Historians, that goes into Saturnian mythology very, very in-depth. And this right here says, in 1938, an Italian scholar named Manny suggested that Saturn was not from the earliest beginnings of Rome at all, but was imported to Rome sometime during the Punic Wars with Carthage. It is true that Romans often, quote-unquote, stole the gods of their enemy in a process called evocatio. And it's also true that later in time, Saturn was somehow associated with the Phoenician god Baal, and also became entangled with the Romans' imperfect understanding of certain ancient Punic rituals involving destruction by fire, including the famous Moloch rites. I don't know what to make about all that, except... they say that the building, which we usually call the Temple of Saturn in the Forum, has foundations that are older than the Punic Wars. So this, the person going in on this is essentially saying that they're, that the entity known as Saturnus, Saturn, was there well before Romans or Greeks put their hands on it. Like there was two... there was this entity that had existed forever. And then it's almost like the Romans and the Greeks tried to put some sort of form to it, some sort of, for lack of a better term, like human form to this, which is where you get your Saturn mythology, you know, eating his children and this, that, and the other. But the entity that is Saturn was here well before the mythology of Saturn, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and it's also weird because I don't remember, maybe I'm wrong. Was there actually in Greek mythology Saturn? Or did they completely displace the name Saturn and just use Kronos? Because I remember Kronos.
It says the Saturn of Greek mythology, which it probably depends on where you're at and how you're learning, because they are kind of interchangeable.
Yeah, yeah. But I was reading that one of the oldest buildings in Rome is actually Saturn's temple, which is very interesting that because I like I said, I just don't feel like I heard about him very much. And there was the mythology side of it where if Saturn felt threatened by any of its children, and this is where you'll see the depiction of Saturn like chewing on a baby, which is a very graphic image. However, that is a almost essentially a modernized take on it, because the tale goes that when Saturn was essentially warned and threatened of his children that they could hurt him or something to that effect, he would eat his children. Now, it wasn't chew them up and swallow them. It was in the context of he would swallow them like a pill. They would rest inside him and be dormant. They would be undamaged, unhurt. They would just be inside him. And that was until Saturn's youngest son, Zeus, was able to free them. And then it created that whole scenario, which I know that I've heard in Greek mythology. Another little fun fact about Saturn is there were a lot of human sacrifices to Saturn, which as one would imagine. There was even... and I forget her name, and I apologize for that, but he had a sister. And I know she has several names throughout the mythology, but essentially her name meant destruction. And they were side by side. And you would have these situations during war where the Romans, I believe it was the Romans, would take the humans, the bodies, alive and dead, and they would burn them in the name of Saturn. And at the exact same time, you would take the weapons and armor and burn those as a sacrifice to his sister. So it went hand in hand during war that you would burn this. And it got to a point in Roman culture and maybe even culture around the world where human sacrifices start to become taboo and unacceptable. It turns into a no-no. So this is an extremely interesting bit of information. So instead of human sacrifices, according to the sources, this is why the Colosseum was built. Is that way the gladiators would fight to their death, which apparently is sacrificed to Saturn. It was just a more palatable way to pass it with the general public. So I find it very bizarre and interesting to sit and think that they built the entire Colosseum to still maintain rituals to Saturn.
Yeah, that's...
It's a weird thought process to actually go down.
I wonder if it has any correlation with where they talked about the Phoenician god Baal, because they said that Baal essentially has... they call her either a sister or a consort that traveled with him named Tanit, and she is equivalent to the war goddess Astarte. I wonder if those two fall within one another.
I'm sure. Another thing about Saturn, which I did not know, but in Western culture, he's represented by the Grim Reaper. Mm-hmm. So anytime you see the Reaper, that is adaptation of Saturn.
Yep. I had touched on it a little bit, I think the last episode. He's represented as an older man, and a lot of times he has a dark cloak, hooded figure. He carries a scythe, and a lot of times that scythe has an hourglass built into it because he's the god of time, of course. And the symbolism is, I mean, he can come and take harvest whatever he needs to whenever. Anything. Whatever his time.
Like I said, crops, animals, humans. He's capable of harvesting that. I did skip over a section, and I do find it very interesting. So in that story I was telling about how he would devour his children, and then Zeus ended up releasing them, and as this sparked the war with the Titans, you can't kill a god. You can cripple them, maim them, or imprison them. This is when Saturn was actually imprisoned, and he was banished to a chthonic realm, and I cannot believe the name of the realm. The realm is Tartarus, which he is said to rule.
Interesting.
The chains of Saturn become one of the definitive parts of his divine after that. So I just find it very interesting that there's a connection between the black cube, Tartarius, however you want to say it. Lots of information that I'm trying to sift through. It's so insane that his being, his lore, like legitimately has sifted through the ages. Names change for him. Images, like they do, like, okay, the Grim Reaper, for example. We know it as the Grim Reaper. That's how we know it. But in all actuality, you're looking at Saturn.
Yep. It's kind of like what I touched on before. It's just traditions and mythology and folklore of whatever these beings are trying to put them in a way to where they're digestible for other humans. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
And now these things are kind of ingrained in our culture and our everyday lives. Like how many, like everybody's seen a picture of the Grim Reaper. And then it makes you think about like the episode we did where people were seeing death. People were seeing the Hooded Reaper.
Or how many people have looked into things or messed with things and then had vivid dreams with humanoid, all black entities?
Yeah. Yeah. Us.
That's why I'm like, it's even weird when you say like, it keeps changing its name. Blah, 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 'cause it throughout.
It's about to get a lot weirder here.
I don't know. Like it's just bizarre that it's bizarre and it's not, because what is the occult? The hidden. It is secrets, knowledge suppressed from everyone, except they are constantly in our faces 24/7. You know, Steve watched a thing that was saying that in all major cities, there's a representation of the black cube somewhere. And I wouldn't be fucking surprised. But how crazy is it to think that there might actually be an old lineage of people still paying homage to Saturn that are able to dictate everything, especially in the context that Saturn is slow and methodical. His magic isn't wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. It is a process. It is unstoppable. And that, like, whether you want to admit it or not, if you were wanting to rule the planet, what type of magic are you smarter to use? The sustainable one.
Yeah. The one that's gonna
slow and steady.
Gonna go through. One that's gonna go through. It's weird that you bring up it keep changing its name, it keeps changing its name, because we all know that I'm like, while Kyle's going over his information, I'm digging into it, right? Like I multitask here. And when he's talking about the old gods and old cultures, I immediately go to Sumerian culture. It's often cited as being the oldest, like, I guess, civilization, for lack of a better term,
right,
on the planet. And I look up Sumerian god Saturn. And it brings up this god called Ninurta. Ninurta is a Mesopotamian god associated with farming, healing, hunting, law, war, and was worshipped in early Sumer, which Sumer is the earliest known civilization, super old, probably 5th or 6th millennium BC. Its earliest records, he is a god of agriculture, which lines up.
Yeah, 100%. Everything you just said essentially lines up with Saturn.
And a god of healing, who cures human sicknesses. I thought, I've heard that somewhere before. I look up old Crazy Legs. He teaches natural and moral philosophy, logic. He's qualities, the usage of all herbs and plants, which would be agriculture.
Yeah.
And is also capable of healing all infirmities, especially in humans.
That's weird.
It's almost verbatim the same. Cures human sickness, healing all infirmities, especially in humans.
It is weird.
That's pretty weird to be like, I know I'm on this path with this crazy leg motherfucker, but it feels like it's pretty specific for it to be a coincidence.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it could be a fucking, it could even be a descendant of Saturn.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be Saturn itself because he says he has children. So,
yep.
I don't know. The more I learn about Saturn, the more I'm just fucking downright confused. And then we haven't even hit like the good stuff. This is just some of the history into Saturn. It gets, I know it's going to get way fucking weirder. I'm probably going to have a hell of a time reading through the magical rites of this book.
Just don't say them out loud.
Right. Because there is like a ritual section in this book, how to perform rituals and shit like that, which I'm not trying to partake in. I'll read through as much as I'm comfortable reading through and relay it to you guys. I just, like I said, I find it so interesting that one particular figure, like what they said, he is greater than time. Because look at, you know, there's a clear link all the way back to Sumer.
And it's not even, it's
into
not even
current time
that he, that he himself can alter fates, right? That is to be like, if you're a top tier god, top tier old god amongst gods, you should be able to change things. But the fact that you just tuning into his magic and power yields you the power to change people's, the direction of people's lives, not just a singular person, not a sole focus, but change an entire group of people's lives is fucking insanity to me.
Yeah. But imagine the cost that comes with dealing with that, because I feel like with, like, I hate to use this description because I was talking about it with Steve earlier, but it is bizarre in some records how they write about Saturn almost like they do Old Testament God, how he just has this, like, if he's good, he's good. Like, he has this side, but he has this other side to him as well that, because I've read in a lot of passages from other books at this point where they state, like, the harvest can be great. This can be great. You can be great. But when he is vengeful, when he is full of wrath, get the fuck out of his way.
Yeah.
Do not be in front of him when he's wrathful. You will reap it.
He'll flood the planet.
I'm not saying that these two are connected. I'm just saying that it is fucking weird how these old scriptures were designed. Very bizarre to me.
Like I said, it feels like
it's you know what it is? It's terrifying to me that they're that close in the verbiage per text. That there are, that it's terrifying that I can even see a parallel. That's terrifying to me.
Yeah. And like I said, it's like these entities were there and religions were started by trying to humanize these, whatever these things are, whatever they are. You know what I mean? Like, there, you think, like, I don't feel like it's a coincidence that Saturn and Old Testament God are that are essentially parallel to one another.
Yeah, outside of certain details, yeah,
which were probably changed via folklore.
It could be oral mythology. Absolutely, could be. And it, like I said, it's terrifying that I could even note that I could even see that parallel, because I shouldn't be able to see that parallel. I don't like seeing that parallel. And once again, I cannot express enough. I'm not saying they are the same. I am not saying this. I'm just saying that the parallels are fucking terrifying.
I think they'll let it slide. Some people will be mad.
Well, that's what I'm just trying to make it clear that I'm not saying.
But we're not saying it's not either.
It's just
prove me wrong.
It's just observation. That's all it is. It is just observation, and I'm not throwing mud at any deity. I'm not trying to provoke the smoke of Saturn, so to speak, because it doesn't sound very cool. I'm trying to pay as much respect as I possibly can.
If I go back to this wiki on Ninurta, which essentially we don't know if it's the same as the
Saturnus god. Well, they knew about planetary alignment and shit anyways.
But it is linked to Saturn. That's the god of Saturn to the Sumerians. If it's the same thing, if they're worshiping the same entity, this is what Mesopotamia and Sumeria put together.
Right.
But just to give you an idea of how fucking old this is, right? So Ninurta was honored. So it has to be was honored by King Judea of Lagash, which ruled 2144 to 2124 BC, 2000 years before Christ. That's old, old.
Oh, yeah. Like they're essentially saying like Saturn is like a real OG, like one of the first.
And that's just when he was recognized, like when he's got his getting his flowers, so to speak.
Right. And I also I'm excited to get to what Arthur meant about how Saturn is just part of a greater being.
Yeah.
Known as chaos.
Which is fucking terrifying.
Because I read slight passages of Chaos and Cosmos where chaos was in existence. And then Cosmos entered the picture and kind of fucked things up. So
weird.
Yeah.
It's so weird that so many ancient cultures spread across the world have similar
everything, like pyramids or religions or God. Like it is bizarre. Like that shouldn't technically happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you just look at it and it says the Canaanite equivalent, the Ebalite equivalent, the Roman equivalent, like these entities were spread across time and space.
Yeah.
Which is fucking crazy.
It is 100% crazy. Like that, like I said, unless there was world travel that we didn't understand back then, that they were capable of it. But outside of that, how do these stories span the world if we're unable to communicate and travel across the world?
Yeah, they were interacting with something.
Oh, I'm 100% sold on that. I'm honestly not opposed to Arthur's story being 100% legit. I wish we had the real name of dude that wrote the book. But I don't know. There's something oddly convincing about the story.
Yeah.
And you could tell by reading this book, so Arthur was a really intelligent man. He wasn't stupid. He did his fucking homework because he breaks down a lot of these old texts and just kind of masterfully explains. Like I said, I'm huge on words and I love some of the descriptive notions that he has. And I don't know. I think I kind of thought it was woo-woo at first, I'll be honest.
Bro, I'm digging it.
I've heard like Tripoli and all these other dudes talk about the Black Cube and Saturn, and you're just kind of like, what the fuck ever? And then I start, I find this one book of everything on the internet about the Black Cube. I find this one book. On a whim, I find the PDF file that lets me start reading it. How often does that fucking happen when it pop up in your Google searches?
Bro, he's changing the fate, bro.
And now I'm reading it.
He's changing the fate.
Which is, okay, theory time.
Let's go. Dude, I love this. I am so like emotionally invested in this story. When you first told me you were doing the Black Cube, I was like, because one of those internet things, like Taylor Swift performed on a Black Cube.
Right. This, yeah, that's how I viewed it. That's how
like,
I viewed it.
Oh, man. But then once you're like, yo, but I found this grimoire, I'm like, I'm in. Let's roll. after that first introductory episode, I'm like, let's fuck.
So hear me out. Arthur did his research. He created a ritual to summon a deity in order to help him. Unbeknownst to him, I'm assuming he summoned said deities from the Roman underworld, pissed all of them off. They were basically get bent, right? He ends up catching the attention of another deity, which is now known as Saturn / Black Cube. Has a conversation with Black Cube. Black Cube makes him the deal. He accepts the deal. But he says, Saturn says, you will do my bidding when I ask. Whenever I ask. Everything, all of your personal bullshit comes second to what I want.
Which sounds very godlike of him.
Oh, 100%. But what I'm getting at is fate itself. So, it gets to a point after Arthur's years and years and years of research and dedication to Saturn. Saturn finally asks that favor. It says, hey, I want you to write. I want you to write about Saturnine deity. I want you to write about me and what it means. Even though Arthur doesn't want to do this, he does this. Now, let's talk about fate. When you look this book up, it is all limited press. 50 copies of this, 900 of that. So think about it in the long game. Like I just said, I go to look for the Black Cube. This is one of the first things that I find. I find a PDF of said book. And what are we doing about it? What are we doing with it right now? We are getting the book into the world. Digitally, of course. Now, I am leaving certain phrases and things out, which may or may not be the right thing to do. But if you look at it from, and this is all theory, of course, right? I do find it ironic. You sit and think about it. You're like, well, weird. Because I'll admit, whenever I go to research things, I will find books, but it'll be buy this book on Amazon. I have yet in all 5 years had a PDF of a book pop up right away on the first page. Because it was literally the third window I opened in my research. Because I'll Google something, I will open a new tab, and I'll create all these things so I can start reading all these different articles and putting a story together. And this was a third one, and it was a blank. It was a blank page when I clicked on it. And then I start scrolling down, I see this weird logo. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Scroll down a little more, and it says the cult of the Black Cube. I'm like, well, that's fucking weird. Start reading it, and then I get fangs are hooked in. I'm all right, I'm vested. Let's go. You know?
I love it.
Not saying that's how it all plays out in the end, but it's weird nevertheless, right?
Furthermore, if you want to take it one step further,
always.
We're looking for a physical copy of this thing. Out of print.
Oh, yeah.
$500, $750, $1,500, out of print. Get to searching, we find one little bookstore in the middle of the UK. Apparently still has some wrapped up, ready to roll.
$75.
What are the odds? It's weird.
Yeah, then with shipping, it was fucking over 100. But that's here nor there. It is definitely fucking strange because it was everywhere we were looking for that book. It was sold out. Everything was sold out, sold out, sold out, sold out, sold out. It is strange.
This is a heater. This is a heater.
It's weird, man.
I'm digging it. I'm digging it, especially like with all the shit going on. And
I'm excited to get into some of the other stuff, man. I mean, hopefully I can wrap it up in another episode or two. I don't want it to be this huge fucking thing, but
oh, let it. If they keep heating like this,
it's fucking some weird, man.
Some of the favorite episodes, from what I know, that we put out have been the multi-parters.
Yeah, the big long ones.
Yeah. This is something that, like, not a lot of people really talk about either.
No, like, this next one's going to get fucking weird. Because you have, like, I'm in the Islamic and classical tradition. There's an Indian tradition. And then you break into the spiritual path.
Let's go.
The Saturnine deity analysis, interpretation. Then you have the Saturnine path. And then you go down and you'll have the practice. Saturnine magic.
When do I start getting to do rituals?
Right in this section. Yeah. Rituals, the self-initiation rite, the Oracle of Kronos to summon Saturn, the Black Cube, and the Rite of Chains, which sounds...
That sounds like something from Hellraiser.
Terrifying.
That's what that sounds like.
The Rite of Chains. Very, very interesting.
Let's go.
I don't know. It's just they're labeled in a way that makes you curious. I don't know. I'm definitely interested to see where this ends up going for us. I know a lot of you are probably going to listen to this and be like, "Yeah, fuck that," and rightfully so. I don't blame you.
Nah, everybody loved the first episode.
Yeah, I know, but this one's getting a little weirder with all the warnings. And I would take heed to it to a certain degree of being careful, labeling, and misrepresenting deities.
I mean, when we were... down the Bledsoe hole, right?
Yeah.
And I went on my tangent that everybody hated about prayer and whatnot. Prayer going out into ether. You don't ever actually know who you're praying to or who's listening. I feel like this is a prime example of something similar to where he's trying to do this ritual and summon help from whatever deity he's focused at. And this old boy says... Hey,
I got you.
I heard you. I heard you.
I mean, essentially,
I heard you're needing some help.
Essentially, if I broke it down correctly, which I think I did, because he talked how he did his ritual. I think he said about three spirits showed up. One of them was definitely nasty. Was not fucking happy that it was called upon. And then they all dissipated. And he's like, all right, I'm never fucking with this again. I fucked up. Not happening. Then he proceeds to have the dream. And this deity goes, you have gotten my attention.
Which is terrifying.
Oh, absolutely. Which is, it legitimately tees off on what you just said about how other things listen to the intent that you put out into the cosmos.
Yeah, and you have, like I said before... Like Earth may be the only planet with life on it. It may be the only planet where life has consciousness. And people are constantly putting their hopes, their dreams, their woes, their fears, just sending it out into the ether. I know there's intent behind it. I know you intend for it to go to a specific place, but that does not mean that other things aren't listening. And how are we... as just these little hairless primates that learned how to use tools and created the internet down here in the middle of nowhere, supposed to differentiate between what ancient entities are good and what are bad?
Oh, I couldn't agree more.
It's horrifying.
That's why magic and the occult scares so many people, because what is up? Oh, you know what? That brings me to another thing I forgot.
I love when these just keep ticking off.
That saying, as above, so below, that comes from Saturn. And the idea of a elliptical orbit. Like that saying comes from an elliptical orbit. Like, because you imagine the planet and then something going around us. The idea that it is the same distance
above
and below. It shows an elliptical orbit.
Yeah, and it kind of makes you think of an hourglass as well. The time you have above.
That's actually a good point. It's a good point, too.
Damn. Heater, bro.
It's a heater. It's fucking weird. I hope you guys liked it.
It is a heater. Yeah. Make sure you... Well, if you made it this far and you didn't listen to the first episode, dumb. If you haven't, go back and listen to the first one. You're going to want it as an introductory to this heater. Thanks for hanging out with us. I am super stoked to get into these next ones. Man,
it's weird.
And it's something that I've never really looked into before. So it's all like, it's just like I'm digesting the information as Kyle is going. I love these. But thanks for hanging out with us this Monday. Tune in tomorrow for the Night Shift recap. Wednesday, hang out with us at the Night Shift, 8 p.m. Central to YouTube. It's a good time. Thursday's your listener experience show. And until we meet again, stay safe, stay weird, and don't tempt Saturn, because he'll change your fate.